Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic, but today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe, like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more, all made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach-churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. I'm Kyle. That's Purdue on my left, Baba to the right. It's a lovely Thursday evening. These gentlemen kind enough to come modify their schedule so I can catch a plane tomorrow. So I think it's probably going to be another informal night. No planned topics or structures, just kind of shoot the breeze about whatever we feel like. Something nice and easy, you know, to edit on the road. You guys have any news or any updates or anything you guys want to share before we get into it?
I don't have any particular news, just my wife's book.
She writing the sequel yet?
She is not. And it's she's got a little bit of writer's block. So
Have you written your book yet?
I am in the God, spoiler alert. Yes, that's a goal for next year.
Nice. Baba, what about you, man? You got anything going on?
No, man, not really. Playing professional taxi driver for my family, you know, in late afternoons.
Oh, sounds like fun, right?
Uh-huh.
How long until you get a driver? Thing.
Do what?
How long until one of them can drive the rest of them?
Oh, God, no. Like, the one that's going to be able to drive the soonest is the one that I think is least likely to actually be able to drive. So,
why least likely?
She's wrecked a golf, like, multiple golf carts, and, yeah, it's...
She's your problem one, huh?
Yeah.
In weeks, I'm going to have a 13-year-old.
Oh, welcome to the club. I have one now.
That was about the age when my daughter's or my wife's kids were when we got married. It's actually not a terrible age. It's the couple after that, like the 15, 16, 17, that gets a little rough.
It's more about thinking about, oh my God, I need to start worrying about and thinking about another car.
That and them lying to you.
Right.
Let's see. For the show, just a reminder that the guest episodes are going to be on hold for a little bit, likely till I get back from Boston Blockchain Week 2024. If anybody listening wants to attend and say hi or just heckle our friend Eric Mason, there's discount links in the show notes. I think we got like 75% off for the first like 50 people.
Nice.
Which, yeah, unless somebody wants to buy 20 of them, I think there'll be plenty. Also, quick shout out to Honduras. Peaked at number 2 in investing over there. Fucking nice job, guys. Not quite to the promised land, but pretty fucking close, huh?
I mean, yeah.
All right. We got a topic request from YouTube. Did you guys see that?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask your guys' opinion, because I don't think any of us really do much with icebergs anymore. I used to like trading them on ES, but it's been like a year and a half, 2 years since I've even looked for one. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
The whole point of the iceberg is basically someone is either on the offer or on the bid, and they are trying to disguise their information. I don't think icebergs are that big of a deal anymore if anyone is educated, either paying attention to DOM, paying attention to Auraflow, or paying attention to candlesticks. Because it's very obvious if you're educated in any of those ways. Like, and that's like everyone says, oh, I see the Auraflow, or I see the iceberg this way or that way. And there are many ways to see the iceberg. You can see as simple on a candlestick, if you, depending on what time frame you go on, and you're on a 1 minute chart. And you see every single candle open and close, or say, let's just say open, and they all keep going down, but every open is right at the same level and they're flat. That's an iceberg right there.
Right.
Like, you don't need special level 2, level 3, whatever Auraflow people say they have.
I actually have level 4.
It is obvious. And like, if you go to the DOM, you know, if you see a level, let's just say 5,200, look at that level on a DOM, and you see there is 500 on the offer, and you keep seeing that being hit, and then it refills, and then hit and refills, and hit and refills. Like, that's an iceberg.
Well, I guess the real question is, like, because you can't really do anything with that information other than there's an iceberg there right now. It's not until price starts to move away one direction or the other before you should be really thinking about, like, you want to see whether that guy's right or wrong before you try to act, right? I think that's kind of the idea.
I 100% agree. And
you have to be careful when jumping to conclusions about
that too,
the intentions of that participant.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be an area of inflection, most likely, because everyone would notice it, right? Mm-hmm. If you're looking at a volume profile, you'd see, probably depending on the size, some type of ledge or like protrusion on a volume profile that's growing, right? Every time we trade into that, because it's, you know, continually refreshing either on the bid or offer. But I think like where something like that shows up, and then how we interact with that post, or like, you know, like how we leave out of there or come back to there, that's going to probably matter more. And there's going to be other things going on that would clue you in. So it's not something I really trade off of. I mean, you'll notice things throughout the day into certain levels or whatever. But I'm never like looking for an iceberg, like
no.
I'm never planning a trade off of, like, that's never going to get, very rarely going to get me into a trade or get me out. The one time or one place, now we haven't seen it a lot lately, really a lot this year as I think about it, but I know last year, spring-ish time, a handful of times coming into the open, NASDAQ would have a very aggressive market seller or market buyer in like a couple points range, and they would be throwing big size, like 50 lots, 100 lots, single orders. Not quite a pure iceberg, but a really tight area that would just build a lot of delta, a lot of volume, and those orders were just getting stuffed. And then right off the open, we would, you know, it would just, that would be the springboard. That would be like the tip of the hand that we're about to have like a no tick 30 second OR that's going to rip like 40 or 50 points right out the gate. I haven't seen that set up much lately, but that would be my not coming closest into the open
approach.
And that would be my question, is like, where's the trade, more so than, you know, how do you identify an iceberg or something like that? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I have a couple of thoughts on that, but I think maybe Vico would probably be a really good one to get to kind of talk about this. Cause you mentioned volume profile ledges. I know that's something that factors in huge to what he does. And I know he's talked a lot about icebergs, in the past when I've talked to him. So maybe we try to set up another one with him. What do you think?
I'd love to do one with him and talk about distributions that they look at. And yeah, some of that kind of stuff. We're right. Always so playing Meku, in the same playground.
Meku Labs, he's the one who sent this question in on YouTube. Meku, if you're listening to this, you can either do it via the comments there, or you can just DM me on Twitter or Discord, or shoot us an email at bandoftraderspodcast@gmail.com. If you got any specific questions on icebergs, send them to us now. We'll start planning that for you.
I just like to reiterate, like, to Baba's point, it is just an area of inflection. Mm-hmm. You're noticing, it's pretty obvious to notice icebergs if you know what you're looking for.
Right.
So if you just understand that, hey, there's an iceberg here, what is this person doing? Is this person offloading or adding or buying or selling? Like, it's like a perfect example today. Like, I saw, in my opinion, several icebergs, but it was a whole bunch of people covering at specific levels.
Mm-hmm.
But when you watch price hit those levels and accumulate and then pop up a little bit and then pull through, obviously, to me, that is a continuation play. So it's like that idea of noticing where those levels are of high importance to high time frame traders, because that's what icebergs are, is high time frame traders, they're positional traders. And you just notice those levels and mark them off, and then notice, what is price doing here? Is it using it as support, or is it using a resistance? That's the best, you know, the basics of it.
I feel like we could probably spend a lot of time going down rabbit holes on this, but
yeah, for sure.
But it just all comes down to, like, what can you see? What can you recognize, right? If that's something that you like, and I mean, maybe ES is a good place to start. That's the place where I think was able to start seeing them pretty easily. Like, if you can't spot them yet, just watch ES on a DOM. You'll start seeing them pop up here and there. That's pretty obvious. I think I got some actual recordings somewhere too. Maybe I can link one of those, but I don't know. Any other thoughts on this, or should we put a pin in that, come back to it later?
The only one I would add to that was always the big offers or bids on the limit.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times, like, especially when I used Sierra charts at the time, you would see these big offers or asks, you know, sitting there on the limit. So basically, if you were looking at a certain level, you would see there's 1,000 lot at 5,200.
Yeah, we used to think of those as targets, but that's
exactly
not necessarily the case as much anymore, is it?
It's not, but when you can put that into your context of your preparation and so forth, I think of those as the same way as icebergs, in a different way. I think of it more in the way of, it's someone saying, come up here and film me.
They're advertising.
And acting like an attractant. Like, if you guys come up here,
you can get this inventory.
Exactly. You can get all the contracts I have over here, up here, down here, whatever. And it was very curious in my experience watching that throughout the day when you would see someone advertising a major level, like an ES of 5,000, 4,100, whatever it was, and we'd be above it. And through time of the day, through RTH, they play games and eventually they go get them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one of those things. It's just like one of those things to the context of your, you know, pre-market prep and RTH as you observe things and see what price action does. It was always, that was always a big deal for me, was watching how price interacts and then seeing someone sitting there with a hefty size advertising. So like there's like, that's like the counter to the iceberg. Like the iceberg is
hiding.
They're trying to hide their size, yeah. But yet you have someone over here saying, "Hey, I have it over here. Come get me."
They're completely different, right? Different motives behind the two.
But we don't have a term for that as far as I know.
There is a term for putting orders on the book, but I'm thinking of it more in the terms of the, spoofing.
This is not spoofing though. Like I've seen it many, many times. I used to have a filter that was 250 above that showed on this, on my charts, and they were not spoofing. They would fill it like a ladder.
All right. It's kind of fun actually answering some questions. So I was fucking around on Reddit actually before we recorded here, and there's this whole thread going on. It's day trading. Like, post your questions if you want to like learn about day trading. And there's a bunch of good ones in here. So it's, I don't know, maybe you guys want to take a crack at answering some of these.
Give it a shot, man.
Why not?
All right. This one is Clean Yam. Says he wants to know, does it take 3 to 5 years to become profitable? Because that's how long you need to develop the intuition about where stocks will go? Question mark. Are there profitable people a year in just because of a strategy? Question mark. I feel like you can have a strategy, but unless you read enough charts and lived through enough days watching daily movement, it won't help you. Question of that is like, how long do you think it takes the people to become profitable? Do you know of people that do it quicker? And what helps more, having a strategy or having experience, like watching charts and like actually like looking for patterns and chart time, I guess, right? How important is chart time?
I'll let Baba answer this one first.
Well, I think there's some conditions that are a part of that, right? So if you're going to quit your job and do this, you better be able to learn really fast. And I would also say that just because you are profitable over a couple of years, that isn't a guarantee that that doesn't tell you how you respond to the stress or the pressure of trying to trade for a living, as we've all experienced together.
Yeah.
So
how many people had a great time trading, you know, post COVID?
Right. So I think the personality is a part of it, like someone's personality. And then the like, what type of information are they taking in? You know, if someone's just going to sit down, look at a chart with just by themselves and just try to go for it, I think that's it's usually a long road.
I can answer. Yeah. I'll second that.
Yeah. That's definitely in the like years. But I think with a couple of people who have some reasonable knowledge of what's going on, and really it's more what to not really worry with or pay attention to. I think there's information overload. Like, there's all these strategies, all these ideas, all these people who have opinions, and really kind of filtering a lot. Like, that's almost like that Japanese thing of too many minds. You know, like, then you're not really going to get anywhere. So if somebody was asking that question, I think it comes down to, do you know someone who's doing sort of what you would hope to do? And then can you get some time around them? I think, you know, I think a year or so is a reasonable time frame to see good progress. 8 months or so to a year, I think somebody should be able to feasibly, you know, without wishful thinking or whatever, say like, yeah, this, I think this, I can do this. I've seen enough progress and I'm developing my own approach. The things that stand out to you, the things you see easily, the things that you enjoy trading, the style that you enjoy trading, all starts to get clear, I think, you know, in that time frame. And then I think from there, then you just retool your own approach and like mold it to fit yourself. But a year, I mean, I don't know what they mean by consistently profitable, like make money every day, exactly. All day. That's right. No one is that. If you say like you look back at a month and most months you're green. Okay. Well then, you know, that's one thing. You look back at most quarters. Okay. Two green quarters, one red quarter. Is that profitable? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, how are you measuring that is a very important question.
I made money today,
yeah,
but lost money tomorrow. I mean,
and that's the point. Like I know off the top of my head, like I know one trader that was profitable in year one, and by year two blew it all up.
Mm-hmm.
So was he profitable? Is he, you know, did he succeed? No.
That's the
timeline thing. Like, and this is like, it goes back to a phrase I remember Pax talking about in one of his spaces on X, was basically every trader is never successful until he leaves the market.
Come on now.
So it's that point. Like you're never successful as a trader until you're extracting that money out of the market, putting it in real estate, putting it into businesses, putting it into somewhere else. But anytime you have
money at risk,
you're vulnerable. And the only thing that makes you successful as a trader is when you exit.
Yeah. And two, I would say for me, like I know me and Banks, we just like we had this erratic P&L for a few years. Mm-hmm. Well, we were just going at it by ourselves, and we would have stretches, months, you know, multiple months where we're like, all right, we've got it figured out. And then that the market is not it is not a binary environment where you can just have on off, you know, like one thing and that's all, one trick pony. Maybe there's something like that out there that I'm not aware of, but that felt like our journey. We would go down a rabbit hole of some concept and kind of get to where it made a lot of sense, and we were doing well with that, and then the benefit from that would begin to trail, and that would kind of create this from a place of like, that's not really working out so well, but this other thing is complementary to that, or you know, here's something else that's complementary to that. And I feel like even to now, you know, anything that's complementary to like the foundation of what I do, like how I approach the market, I'm interested to learn about.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not interested to flush everything down the toilet and start from zero because I now found the magic, you know.
How many times have you heard from a new trader who's like been on the journey for a few years that, you know, they start out with one thing and then they go down the rabbit holes of chasing like 1,000 different strategies, but how many of them come back to the first thing that they're originally interested in? And then that becomes like the main thing they trade with.
Yeah. I also think like, as you grow or as you learn, personality may be the driving factor in this approach, but you can either have the throw it all out and start over mentality, which I think a lot of people have, and that is what I would be prone to is, all right, well, that doesn't work. What works? And what I've had to, like what I've actually had to grow into is how do I assimilate something appropriately without feeling the need or without flushing everything else down the toilet. Yeah. So what's complementary to what I'm doing? What gives more clarity to it? Those are things that I'm, you know, interested in. And then and for me, a lot of it now is coming just down to like, where's the trade? Like Flaherty talks about that a lot, but like, I don't really care about much other than like, where can I pull the trigger and how repeatable is that? And to Purdue's point of you get, you're not, you know, successful really till you're not at risk anymore, both intraday and then like for the bigger picture, like of life, like longevity has become such, and we talked about this like a year ago, Purdue and I did, like, I'm more interested in if something works good, like if there's, if I have a really, really good day or a really, really good month, I just find myself not caring that much about that. Mm-hmm. What I really care about is to get to the end of a year, you know, like, oh, and I don't ever like the feeling in a trade like I got away with something.
Yeah.
Because that I don't feel is sustainable.
Yep.
So if I, you know, have a bad day and then somehow catch like just a banger of all trades that wipes it all up and finish green, well, that's great. But that is that the model day type that breeds longevity? No,
right.
It's not. And so I think to the question of profitability, I think married to that needs to be like longevity, like a pursuit of the ability to have this repeatable, consistent approach that maybe in you know, day to day has its wiggles, but over a large period of time, it proves itself out to be beneficial.
Just like any other normal business.
Business, yeah. Exactly.
I mean, a perfect example is my landscape business right now. July through August is typically historically through my decades of experience, is the crappiest time of the year. Everyone's on vacation. Everyone's on summer. No one wants to talk to you. No one wants enhancements. Everything is dry as heck. And, you know, it's just zombie land. Like, it just do repetitive task. And then all of a sudden, like right now, everyone's back in school. Everyone's starting getting back into their schedules. And everyone's already looking at the horizon of Thanksgiving. And oh my God, I need to core aerate seed. I got to install these plants over here and this and that. And we have 2 months left to go. So it's just like that getting in cycle with not only your trading, but understanding your business. And just like trading is actually normally, historically, you know, July and August are terrible months. That's why everyone talks about taking summer off. Like, right. It's a terrible time to trade normally. We've had some immense volatility this season that's been either good or bad for you, but it's not normal. And that's what it takes decades and years to learn and so on and so forth.
And Bob, I made a great point at the very beginning there too, about the, like, if you're just staring at the charts alone by yourself, it's going to take a while. And yeah. Like, I can speak to that. Like, that's the route I started with. And the problem is, like, you're watching the charts. Yeah, sure. You're looking at it, but you have no fucking idea what you're looking at or looking for. You're just watching and hoping sooner or later that, you know, you're going to actually spot something that you can take advantage of. And then the idea too of like throwing stuff away all the time. I don't know how many things I've scrapped that I've actually gone back to and looked at and been like, oh, there is an application for this. So like a lot of the work that you think you're doing and throwing away, like that has value. There's still going to be probably situations where you could pull that up, dust it off and put it to use somewhere.
And that's every trader's path, frankly.
Yeah.
Is, you know, don't take it, I'm a jackass for subscribing to this person or paying for this course or doing X, Y, or Z. You know, I've been down the gamut. I will go on the record and tell you how many things I've done and failed at and experienced. But the whole point is that I've taken all the information and I've stripped it apart. And like Fleury says, and I always love this saying, if it's not paying a rent, then get rid of it.
Yeah.
So it took a whole bunch of going through a lot of crap to figure out what I like, what I pay attention to, and what fits me to strip all that crap away to what's paying rent. And that's, to me right now, I don't have CR charts. I don't have order flow. I pay attention to candlesticks.
Yep. And probably what you started with and you liked, huh?
Darn good job at it, too.
Yeah.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And one thing I'll say that I have done, that I have started doing periodically, is I'll go through, because I do still have Sierra charts, although it's apparently like everybody's leaving Sierra charts, which is
I'll
cool.
be getting it back again. I got a fast track.
But
their own fault.
I'll go back to old charts that I built.
Oh, yeah?
And because when I am working on something, a lot of times I'll build, like rebuilding on a chart, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'll just periodically, when I'm like have nothing better to do and whatever, I'll just go pull up old charts of stuff that, or old even like chart books that have multiple charts in them. And, you know, every so often I'll like go through and pare my chart book down, which I did like a month ago, maybe mm-hmm. pare down a bunch of the stuff that I'm taking in, because I don't want to sound contradictory to my prior statement, but I don't want too many different things to think about.
Yeah.
And so what can happen is, as I'm messing with stuff, I'll build a chart for this, I'll build a chart for that. And if they make their way into my main chart book, every so often I'll go through and just clean that chart book out. And then I'll save those to like a different, just standalone chart. And then every so often I'll go look through those. And it's interesting to see, you know, what kind of stuff I've looked at, like,
because I was trying cycles to those things, right? So sometimes I guess things might start working again, you know, like maybe it quit working for 6 months.
Or like you're building, right? So you build little layers of in a direction, and then you go back and look at something else. You go, oh, that fits really well with this.
Yeah.
Like I was building kind of like a depth of market book map slash, you know, kind of thing a while back. And I was really into like working on, and then I kind of like got it to a place that I thought was cool, and then I hadn't looked at it in a while, and now I've been keeping it like up on a window, just noticing it again. I went a while without looking much at like a footprint chart, and then over the last couple months, you know, I've been keeping a footprint chart of some sort up on a side window, just to be able to pay attention to, you know, certain spots, certain size orders, and kind of how we're, you know, what's happening, you know, in the background. So I don't like looking at a DOM personally. So I kind of handicap myself away from a DOM because I get sucked in and real myopic with the DOM. So I kind of have always leaned towards having charts that real visually represent a lot of what is pertinent from a DOM. And I mean, this is kind of a tarry away from the question, but all of that is stuff that someone's going to go through on their path to figuring out how to be reasonably consistently profitable in all of this, you know, and you'll ebb and flow along the way.
And don't try to measure yourself against other people too. It's going to take what it's going to take. Yeah. Like you try to put in timelines and deadlines onto it, that's going to be the quickest way to blow yourself out of the game.
100%.
Yeah, just and trade small.
Yeah,
like trade small for a long time.
Your goal to learn is to learn and not blow up,
not go broke. Yeah. So trade real small, and you'll learn to be. I think there's probably a way to form a stat around this, but contracts, like return on risk, like return on contract. So like, if I trade 5 minis, right, and make $500, or I trade 5 micros and make $500, the better trader is most well, the better risk adjusted trade is the five micros for $500.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're taking on way less risk, like a what, 20%?
A tenth.
A tenth of the risk. Yeah. A tenth of the risk for the same return. So you got to like think in longevity side.
Yeah.
Can you have a really crappy day and still be alive to trade tomorrow?
Yep.
You know.
All right. You want another question? Kind of like that.
Sure.
All right. This is pharmacy isn't worth it. Sometimes I feel like I do better when following my intuition more than when I overfocus on indicators. Is it normal to just have a sense or feeling about where price will go next just from how much I lost and traded the same stock? Question mark.
Every trader says past tense.
Yeah, intuition versus indicators.
Well, so I think for me, I can only speak from my experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
For me, I don't really have – I have things that paint a picture of like ranges and like rotations. I don't really have – I mean, I guess I have some indicators that are just communicating, hey, there's a large order here, or hey, you know, that's pretty much it.
Right. Well, you got your buy-sell zone things that pop up, or yours – was those defend and hold zones maybe or something?
Yeah. Well, when we've like trapped a bunch of delta swing low or something. Yeah. But what one of the best practices, I think Purdue probably will love this and could probably speak better to it. I think we've talked about this on another something that we've done together, either in the room or something on strategy night. But like, I think a great practice is to go back in a chart and look at where you wish you would have executed.
Yep.
And then try to figure out what is, if there is a truism that's present in that moment. And so one of the places that we've talked about is like swing highs, like hourly swing highs or swing lows or daily swing highs or swing lows or 4-hour lows and highs. That's why I thought Purdue would like this, you know,
overnight
trading
and lows.
Below a 4-hour low and trading back in. If you look back at a chart and you go, man, who had the thought to buy below that or right when we came back up to that prior 4 hours candles close and then trade all the way back through it or whatever, like, or go down to like a 15-minute. What is present at this swing low that I could see repeatedly as kind of a clue to like, hey, maybe pay attention, think about the opportunity that might be here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying like you buy every new low and sell every new high. Look at today. Like if you bought every new low today, you would have taken the stops until the absolute close of the market or 1 minute before.
Yesterday was even worse.
Which is why I walked away.
Yeah. So, but I would say if there's an indicator that seems to line up with what you perceive as a great opportunity as you look back at the chart, then I would say, great. Yeah. Like definitely maybe incorporate that. I don't think just flying by the seat of your pants and going, well, it's high enough here, maybe we'll sell it. Or, oh, it's low enough here, we'll sell it. Like I know there's a couple of traders like Flair will say, you know, sometimes a trader's got to trade and that's true. But that should be the exception, I think, not necessarily the standard approach. I think it's helpful to have something kind of reining you in a little bit.
I think with the sensor feeling, I feel like you almost have to have some way to quantifying that and proving that you have an actual edge before you can actually rely on that. Like intuition is something that maybe gets developed if it even exists. And
yeah. So, and it's also how you define intuition. So like
right.
If intuition is that when we gap above a prior 15-minute range from the open that we never traded below, if we gap below that overnight, I really want to short when we trade back into that, if we do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is now intuition, but it also came from a very, like, there's a standardized process.
Is that intuition? Intuition to me is something that's based on just gut feel. Like that looks like that's something that can be quantifiable.
That was to your point of it needs to be measurable or quantified. Yeah, yeah. Now it's now it's like when I see that, I have the inclination to want to participate a certain way in the market. Mm-hmm. When I saw that, you know, 7 years ago, I would not have had that inclination. And right, that came right. from very specific criteria that now, after seeing it play out and backtesting it, I know that there's an opportunity.
So develop your intuition through backtesting, I think, is more the idea here.
Yeah, yeah, maybe that's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, because then at least your intuition has some sort of, you know, grounding and statistical analysis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what intuition should come from. It should be from a statistical edge that you have seen repeated throughout right. the market. And, you know, I see so many people on, like, YouTube and this and that, you know, I have a level here, I buy here. And I'm like, okay, the 4 hour is down, the 1 hour is down, the 30 minute is one time reframing down, and you're going to buy here and then be excited that you got a 10 point pop and how genius you are. Like, you're catching a falling knife and got lucky. Like, you know, yeah. if you have statistical data that says, like, every single of my levels will get that kind of bounce, then fine. But I've seen it so many times on X and on YouTube, and it's kind of frustrating. But yeah, your intuition comes from, and that's how I trade, frankly. I don't have the indicators on my charts are basically VWAPs. I have anchored VWAPs and I have extended VWAP. Those are only the indicators I have on my chart. I just pay attention to the candlesticks and mm-hmm. who's in control. Well, the 4 hour is down, the 1 hour is down, and the 30 minutes down. Well, bears are in control. Pretty simple.
Right.
And vice versa. Like, it's just paying attention to where the candlesticks are pointed. If you're in a range and you can't decipher just in that simple schematic, 4 hour, 1 hour, 30 minute, if you can't decipher who's in control, it's a consolidation range and don't play. That's how my simple mind strategy is just that. When I see someone has control, I want to play with them and I want to find a position in their direction.
Mm-hmm.
And today was a great example of that. The fake out to the upside. Bulls technically were in control. I'm a day trader though. I say bulls had control, like when you look at the daily, weekly, and higher time frames, but I'm a day trader. When I see a 4 hour candle fail and then pull down below, yeah, I'm immediately, you see the 4 hour close up above the 1 hour. The 1 hour and the 30 minute all close below the previous 4 hour high. That's sellers taking control in my world, which is day trading, and was short, short, short.
Mm-hmm.
So it's putting in contents of where you are as a trader and your intuition. And have you back tested? Have you researched? Like, that's the biggest thing. Your intuition comes from experience.
Well, then, okay, this is a great question to kind of, I think, probably take us into the end here. Then it kind of builds on that. This is Peps. I think it's supposed to be Pepe'sville, but it's not spelled right. He says he started learning 6 months ago, read several books, viewed countless videos, did a few courses, have the platforms, but what he's having the most trouble with is getting the practical experience. He says, when I look at the charts, I feel overwhelmed and can't see much. How would you say is a good way to try to build those screen time hours? How many hours a day? What to look for? How many charts, etc.?
Well, I think Purdue just said it, right? I mean, look at a daily 4 hour, 1 hour, 30 minute, and let that inform somebody.
Or some version of higher to smaller time frame.
Yeah, or whatever.
Multi-time frame. Yeah. But I will say to that, the most experience I ever gained, ever. And I used to be very religious about this. And frankly, I need to get back to this, especially when I'm looking to get back into equity markets. But I used to have 100 lists of tickers. And I used to be religious.
Stocks, you mean?
Every single day, clicking through every single chart. And I would go daily, 4 hour, 1 hour, and dial down and go through every single ticker.
What are you looking for as you go from higher to lower?
Back then, I didn't have a clue.
So what are some things that a new person could try to look for then, or some things that point them in the right direction?
you will start observing things. You will start observing how price reacted, how it came down to this area and it had a quick reaction up, or sorry, like let's just say we're looking at just a random chart, doesn't matter what it is, and it's going down and it hits a previous high or a previous yearly high and it hits it and then it quickly reacts up and then just takes off. You know, you'll look at the same chart on a different ticker and it comes down to that same type of level, mm-hmm. but yet it consolidates and chops around and then eventually breaks through it. Like you'll notice those cues that start building up that intuition of when you start staring at charts and start looking at patterns and how price reacts to different levels and so on and so forth. But I think the best intuition, the best advice for anyone,
not advice,
is to look at charts offline.
Offline, not while they're live?
100% offline. Yeah. All the work of a trader, in my opinion, is done offline.
Mm-hmm.
During regular trading hours, you are executing your plan. Outside RTH, you are planning for your next day. When you're a student, all that should be offline and should be gathering information and looking for those patterns and looking at how price reacts to certain levels and how you trade. Like for me, I have my volume balance areas, which is completely separate from TPO balance areas. It's a different spin on my own version of it that I do offline,
mm-hmm.
or outside of RTH, and it works for me. So it's that adaptation of figuring out what you see, I think is, and it doesn't hurt you, like, because obviously you're in RTH, unless you're trading futures, but everything's offline, like everything's static. So you can learn way more and you can backtest way more, and there's just so much benefit. But if you get in that routine of constantly looking through charts, you can accelerate your learning and accelerate your intuition by going back in time and looking, like, I mean, for example, like if I was day one, if the best piece of advice I give someone and they were interested in day trading, then fine, go back to 2007 and start playing charts.
Right.
Like just look at a daily chart, pick five tickers and just look at them daily. You don't know any, you don't have to know anything. I guarantee you'll find patterns.
Well, I think too, if you take like Baba's approach with that and just start looking for the trades, like where do you wish you could have gotten a trade here, and then start drilling it down from high time frame to low time frame, you're going to find something that stands out to you, and that's what you need to lean into.
Yeah, that's the advanced part.
Yeah. Baba, any other thoughts on that?
Well, one thing that I would say is if the person asking the question said when they look at their charts, they don't really see much, then I would start taking stuff away.
He said he feels overwhelmed, yeah.
Or
yeah.
overwhelmed. Like, it sounds like, again, like there's probably too much going on to make a decision off of. You know, how many
different things can you focus on or pay attention to, like you guys? Like, how many different things can you have on the charts before it feels crowded or overwhelmed?
I have two. I look at two screens mainly, or I'm sorry, two charts mainly, and that's a 15-minute and a 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
I have one chart that is a high time frame chart that has eight different futures charts, and one chart that I'm paying attention to.
Yep. It also depends on what, like, I don't, if I was, I'll look at a 30-second chart at the open to see where a 30-second opening range is going to come in.
Right.
And obviously we look at, I try to pull my head out of the minutia of a 15-minute/1-minute chart and look at, like go to a 4-hour and go back to a daily just to keep myself in tune with what's happening. And you'll see, you know, you see that throughout the day. But yeah, like if I'm trading, I mean, the information, the benefit, I guess, of Sierra too, is like, I have a footprint chart, but when something important happens on the footprint chart, it shows up on the 1 minute chart that I've got on my screen. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't really have to hawk the footprint chart or hawk a delta chart. That stuff pops in automatically. So, but yeah, I mean, as far as if I'm trying to make a trading decision, hopefully I've identified some spot that I don't want to be long below and some spot that I don't want to be short above. So like kind of banded the market to some extent. And then inside of there, you know, obviously we're looking for like a certain trade setup, but I'm only looking, you know, inside that context generally.
Mm-hmm.
To that point though, and I think this is where the person asking the question, because I was there and I'm assuming they're an equity trader.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, sure, you guys may differ, but in my opinion, if you are a day trader, equity trader, and you are profitable, you are the F1 car. You are the top echelon. I mean, to be a day trader and trade only equities, as in NVIDIA, Apple, Microsoft, whatever, and you're trading whatever popping news, that is extremely difficult.
Really? Max Thomas thinks that that's easier than trading futures, doesn't he?
But that's the point, though. I do agree with him in that point to a sense, but as a brand new trader, and this is the pitfall that I fell into, was always, I am looking at whatever is on the, you know, on the squawk early in the morning through, God, I can't remember the squawk I used to have back then.
There's no consistency to what you're looking at. You're just looking at whatever's hot that day.
Yeah. I was looking at, you know, 100 different tickers in the morning and figuring out what news this is that, and then creating a list, and these ones are gapping up, these ones are gapping down, and, you know, deciphering the news and this and that. Like, you're looking at so many widgets, and this is where it helped me a ton, was when I found futures, is that was my focus was
one market.
Yes. Like, it was just nothing but there. And you guys know for a very long time, I never traded NQ. I never traded anything else. And then I branched out to YM, and then eventually it was MNQ or NQ. And I've, you know, been playing in those realms now. But for me, like, the biggest thing was, it is still difficult to me. And this is like personality types, you know, how you trade and how you feel. Can you really adapt and get a bias, get a actual strategy and a plan, and go through all those steps in a very quick process? Or do you need to be hyper-focused on one thing? And for me, I am the personality of, I get hyper-focused on one thing. Like, everything, it goes from trading to business to everything. Like, if I'm going to do something, I'm hyper-focused. I'm going to get this thing, damn thing done until it's done.
Yeah.
Like, that's the way I look at things. For other people, not to be sexist, but like, a lot of women can multitask better. Like, I like to do one thing only. My wife can do several different things all at the same time and keep all the balls afloat. And I would just say, those aren't important. I'll just do this one. And then I'll pick those ones up, you know? So it's that type of mindset. So it really depends on the person.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, that is an easy route, or easier route you can go to, is just like, if you're getting overwhelmed looking at too many equities, just go to fucking ES and, or not ES, triple Qs and SPY. Like, simplify it to a couple markets, and then you can start to become familiar with those nuances.
I know several traders personally that only focus, and here's like getting specific. I actually know two traders that are very wealthy, only Amazon, paying the one NVIDIA thing.
Apple
200 calls. I am dead serious. I know several traders that are very profitable, and they only pay attention to that chart, not the equity chart, the premium chart on the Apple 200 calls for 2025. So think about that. Like, that, you know, micro goals or ideas, like, we were thinking about like looking at the broad chart of ES, SPY, and this and that. This is someone that's just, and actually know two of them that just focus on just the premium chart of 200 calls on Apple.
Right.
A year away.
One option chain. That's it.
Yes.
Do you have any other emails? Maybe they want to talk to us. I'd like to learn a little bit more about this strategy.
We have asked them once. Yeah.
Shit.
Yes. Or I have asked them once.
Any other thoughts for this one, or should we put a bow on it and say goodnight?
I think it's bowed.
But a bow. Bo, good job, buddy. I mean, if you guys like this, I don't know, I wouldn't mind doing another one of these. Maybe we can collect some of our own questions next time. I just kind of threw that together with the cesspool that is Reddit, because sometimes you find some good gems in there.
Yeah, it'd be cool to do something on Twitter where people can send us questions and then we can do like an answer. We did that Q&A with Cleo one time.
Yeah.
Or a couple AMAs in the room. I really enjoyed those.
I did too. So it's kind of hoping we capture a feel of that without having to go through the work of collecting the questions to start with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send them in. If you got questions, send them in. Maybe we'll do another one of these of your guys's. But I think that's probably going to do it for tonight. Thank you, Baba. Thank you, Purdue. Everyone else, like, share, subscribe. See you next week. Peace.
Peace.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.